Tonight we encounter a minister who in turn has encountered Professor Gilderley, who seems to have a very unusual problem. And from the professor, the minister works out the story of how love came to Professor Gilderley. Our story centrals around Central Park and, well, let's say a persistent house guest. And what does Napoleon the Parrot have to do with it? All to be told in this story from Radio City Playhouse from June 13, 1949.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 42. Ladies and gentlemen, here is the director of Radio City Playhouse, Harry W. Junkin.
Thank you, Fred Collins. First of all, ladies and gentlemen, a word of sincere thanks for the many wonderful letters which you wrote to us about last week's broadcast, Note on Danger B. We're very glad you enjoyed it and very appreciative of your praise. However, we wish to emphasize again that Note on Danger B was fiction, not fact. The broadcast was based on a short story by Gerald Kirsch, which appeared in the Saturday Evening Post. And not only the characters themselves, but all events and plot material were imaginary. None were true or actual. And now our show tonight. We have with us two very fine actors making their second appearance on Radio City Playhouse. Louis Van Ruten is heard as Professor Gildea and David Gothard as Father Murchison in How Love Came to Professor Gildea, Attraction 42 on Radio City Playhouse. As a minister of the gospel in New York City, it is part of my job to help people in trouble. Any kind of people in any kind of trouble. More than anything in the world, I wanted to help one man. But he was beyond help when I met him. It is tragic, incredible, terrifying, but true. The story of how love came to Professor Gildea. I first saw Professor Gildea at a lecture he gave at the Botanical Society. I am interested in botany, perhaps because flowers are so close to God. I was struck by his brilliance, by his piercing blue eyes. But most of all, I was struck by the fact that here was a man so afraid of something that he couldn't conceive it, even on a lecture platform. Perhaps no one else in his audience noticed it. But in this strong and brilliant man, I could sense terror. He was living, moving, and breathing in a fear so desperate that it was driving him crazy. I was drawn to him. I wanted to help. Yet, I was afraid to intrude. I waited until the lecture hall emptied and he was gathering up his notes. Then I went up to him and thanked him for his talk. Professor Gildea, my name is Murchison. I enjoyed your talk very much. Very much indeed.
Well, that's very kind of you, Father Murchison. I'm glad you liked it. Yes?
I have a very strange impression that... Well,
that what?
That something is bothering you.
Have you?
I thought that perhaps you wouldn't mind if I offered to help.
I'm sorry, Father. I don't go to church.
That, of course, is your own affair. I merely felt that... I'm sorry. It's none of my business. I'll get along. But I did want you to know how much I enjoyed your...
Wait just a minute, Father.
Yes, Professor.
What you say is quite true. You see, I...
You are afraid of something.
Yes. Yes, I am. Could you have dinner with me tomorrow night?
Why, I think so.
Here's my card. It's apartment 1A, 5th Avenue, just north of 89th Street. About 7:30?
7:30 will be fine. I'll be there.
Thank you. And thank you very much for speaking to me. I do have need of somebody. Something. I'll see you tomorrow night at 7:30.
Thank you.
is the drawing room. We'll have our coffee in here.
Coffee in here.
What on earth is that?
That's Napoleon, a parrot I picked up 3 years ago. I was making a study of the imitative powers of birds. Say hello, Napoleon. Say hello.
Coffee in here.
It's extraordinary, isn't it, the way they talk? I've never had much to do with parrots.
Well, sit down, won't you? Pitting will bring our coffee in a moment.
Coffee in here.
Certainly, with that parrot around, you'd never be lonely.
I would never be lonely anyway.
What a strange thing to say.
Well, I'm afraid I have a rather poor opinion of my fellow man, Father Murchison. The masses are stupid and dull-witted. Friends and enemies take too much time. Women are a bore. I'm quite happy to live alone. I always have.
Have you never been in love?
Why do you say that?
What is the matter with you? There's something. I can feel it.
Yes, I imagine you can. I can feel it, too.
What do you mean?
Here's Pitting with our coffee.
Will you have it on the coffee table, sir?
Yes, Pitting. We'll pour our own.
Will that be all, sir?
That's all, Pitting. Good night.
Good night, sir.
How do you take your coffee?
Black, please.
There you are.
Thank you.
Since you seem to be so observing, I'll tell you everything. The fact is, I'm very upset. 2 weeks ago, I was working in this room at night. It was quite late, about 11. I went to the door to get a breath of air. I stood on the steps for a moment, and I noticed somebody sitting on one of the park benches across the street. Would you mind if I showed you the bench?
You want to go over to the park now?
Oh, no, you can see it from my window. Would you mind stepping over here?
Well, not at all.
I just want you to get the exact picture in your mind.
Over here!
These curtains are dusty. You know this district?
Not very well.
I had a beautiful night.
Does the traffic keep you awake?
I'm used to it. This is Fifth Avenue, as you know. That's Central Park. Now, do you see that bench? The bench against the wall.
Over there.
The one against the stone wall, just this side of the streetlight.
Yes.
Well, that's the bench where I saw it. So
what?
Let's get away from this window. Is your coffee cold?
No, fine.
I was standing on my doorstep looking across the street at that bench. Suddenly, I became aware that somebody was sitting on it. I became intensely interested in this person as though, very interested. I crossed the street intending to make some remark about the weather. I felt compelled to speak. And then when I got to the bench, the person had vanished.
Vanished?
Well, it wasn't there anymore.
It?
I couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman. When I saw the bench was empty, I was ridiculously disappointed. I felt sad, depressed. Then I turned around and came home. When I got to the apartment, I discovered I'd left the door open.
The door into the street?
Both doors, as a matter of fact. The door from the street into the hall and the door from the hall into the apartment. However, I wasn't gone more than 5 minutes and I wouldn't think any more about it if it weren't for the fact that...
The fact that what?
That when I came back, I had a very definite feeling that somebody or something had come into this room while I was out.
And then had left?
No. Had stayed.
Had stayed?
Is staying. Is here now.
Oh, you're joking.
Do I look like I was joking?
You mean you think there is someone in this room now?
I know there's somebody in this room now.
But you can't see whatever it is.
No, I can't see it.
Then how do you know that it's here?
I can feel it. I can sense it.
But this is... Do you mean some sort of...
I don't know. Believe me, I don't know. Now, I'm a scientist. I think I'm as sane as the next man. Look at me. Do you think I'm capable of making this up?
My dear Professor Gildea, it's so fantastic that I...
That you don't believe it.
I believe that you certainly have this sensation. But, oh, good heavens, man, you're shaking.
Yes, I am. I'm sorry.
Have you had this sensation for long? This feeling that there is somebody in this room?
Ever since that night.
For 2 weeks?
Yes.
Now, look here. Would you mind if I spoke very frankly to you?
Please do.
I think you're very tired, overworked, strained. You look strained. Why don't you take a vacation?
You think this whole thing is hallucination, that it's mental?
I'm sure of it. The way you live isn't natural. No friends, no social life.
Friends are a waste of time, believe me. There's nothing personal in this. I just frankly find most people completely unsatisfied.
Won't you take a couple of weeks off?
Well, all right, I will. I'll go to Cuba. I'll go to Cuba for 2 weeks.
And will you do something else?
What?
Before you go to Cuba, will you go to a doctor? I thought about Professor Gildy a great deal during the next 2 weeks. He had a strangely hard face tipped with a little black goatee. Everything about him was solid, cold fact. The scientist, the intellectual. I liked him. I admired his brilliant mind, and I made a point to inquire about his work. He had much to do with the discovery of penicillin and some of the sulfur drugs. He sent me a postcard from Cuba showing several very beautiful girls lying on the beach. I think he thought it might shock me. The night he returned to New York, he telephoned me. I was in my study. Hello?
Father Murchison.
Speaking.
Brett Gildea.
Well, welcome home. How was the trip?
Splendid, thank you. I got home this morning. Are you busy at the moment?
I'm working on my sermon for this Sunday.
Could you possibly come over here?
Right now?
Yes, right now, if you could.
Is anything wrong?
Yes. Something is very wrong.
Is it the same thing that we discussed?
Yes, only worse. I'm sorry to bother you, but I'd appreciate it very much if you could come.
All right, I'll take a cab. I'll be there in half an hour.
Professor Gildy is in the drawing room, sir. Just go right in. He's expecting
you. Thank you, Pitting. Well, so the traveler's returned.
Oh, it's good of you to come so quickly. Sit down.
Thank you. Well, I bet you're looking very tanned and healthy.
Before I left, I did go to a doctor. One of the best diagnosticians in the country. I'm in perfect shape.
Oh, splendid. I'm glad to hear it.
That's why I'm so upset.
You mean your visitor is still here?
Yes.
In this room?
Yes, in this room. It welcomed me here this morning.
But how? In what way?
Simply by being here, that's all.
Gildea, I really don't know what to say. I don't know what...
If I were in your position, Father, and you were in mine, I should certainly think you were crazy, the victim of some sort of nervous delusion. I believe I can prove to you now that there is something in this room. If I can't, you can take me to every psychiatrist in town. Take a good look at Napoleon.
Well, he seems the same as usual.
And he knows we're looking at him. Do you notice his attention is fixed on something in that corner of the room?
Surely you don't think that a parrot can see this thing, too?
I'll prove it. I'll prove to you that Napoleon sees it. I merely sense it.
Oh, my dear fellow, you're trembling.
Yes, I am. Would you mind getting behind the drapes? I'll pull them apart a little. Would you mind?
Why, no.
Would you stand in here? It's a bay window. There's plenty of room for both of us.
What are you going to do?
I'm covering Napoleon's cage. This is a green baize cover I put over him at night.
Why did you cover the cage?
To remove his attention from everything in the room. Now, if you'd move over a little, I'd get in the window beside you.
Well, this is all very mysterious.
Shh. Now keep your voice down and keep perfectly still. You know Napoleon invariably watches anything that's moving. Oh, if you can sit on the windowsill. Just keep very quiet. I'll reach out, lift the cover off the cage. There.
Well, seems to be behaving quite normally.
Wait.
What's the matter with him?
He's seen something. Look. See how still he's standing? He's watching something and listening. You see? Way his head tilts to one side. He's listening to something.
Why is he rustling his feathers?
Watch him. Please keep your voice down. You see? He's pecking at the bars of his cage. Watch him. See him moving over? Now watch him. In a moment, he'll put his head through the bars of the cage.
Oh, good heavens, he's
being stroked, Murchison. Something is stroking his head. I've done it too often myself. Look at the way he's pressing his head up against something. Look at him, he loves it.
What in the name of...
Shh, listen to him.
Hello, Gildea, surely you don't think...
Yes, I do. He's imitating an idiot. Oh.
Shut up, Napoleon, shut up!
All right, come on, Father. Sit down.
Oh, I don't know what to say. May I have some of this?
It's brandy. Help yourself. Well?
I can't believe it. I just can't believe
do
it.
Do you believe that bird saw something? Was being stroked by something?
Yes, I do.
What did it remind you of? The noises Napoleon made. What did it remind you of?
I don't know.
It's the slobbering, the horrible look of the bird, the sickening way he moved. He's imitating something that is mentally abnormal.
It suggested extreme sentimentality with feeble-mindedness.
Exactly. I'll have some of that brandy myself.
Oh, that's the most nauseating thing I've ever seen in my life.
You wouldn't think a parrot could do it, could you? Napoleon's very clever. I've studied him for hours.
Oh, it reminds me of something. There was a woman once, a poor sick soul that came to all my sermons. She never missed, and she'd always sit close to the front. All through the sermon, she'd smile and smirk and nod her head and make faces at me. She used to wait after church was out to shake hands with me. Once she reached up very suddenly and kissed me. I was revulsed and horrified. She was quite harmless, but no mind at all. Even knowing this, I couldn't banish the sick loathing I felt when she touched me. God's house is open to all, but I'm afraid I told her not to come back. Napoleon reminds me of that woman.
Then you know what I mean. The actual physical nausea I'm experiencing.
You mean you are conscious of this visitor all the time?
Yes, all the time. At this moment, even... Excuse me for spitting. This thing makes me literally sick to my stomach. There's no brain, only the cunning of idiocy. Murchison, it loves me.
Loves you?
I know it. I have no reason to fear it. It loves me. That's what's so disgusting.
Look, will you let me talk to Pitting?
About this, he'd think you were out of your mind. I haven't told him.
No, not about this. I'd like to ask him some questions.
All right, anything you like. I'll ring for him. I warn you, he's as cold as a fish. Been with me 7 years. I don't know any more about him than the day he came. I'm not the least bit interested in each other as human beings.
That's unfortunate.
You think he might be a better servant if I cultivated him?
No, I think he might be a better friend.
Oh, here he is.
Did you want something, sir?
Well, come in, Pitting. Father Murchison here would like to ask you some questions.
Ask me some questions, sir?
What kind of questions?
Pitting, while Professor Gildea was away, did anybody come in this room beside you?
No, sir.
You're sure?
Yes, sir.
Did you move Napoleon's cage anywhere while the professor was away? Did you take him outside, into the park or anything?
Oh, no, sir. I've never been interested in Napoleon.
His cage stayed right here all the time. He saw no one?
No one, sir.
All right, Pitting, thank you.
Is that all, Professor Gildea?
That's all, Pitting. Good night.
Good night, sir. Good night, Father Murchison.
Good night.
Well?
I'm baffled. Completely baffled. And I must leave. I have a sermon to finish.
Will you come tomorrow?
I did have an engagement.
Please come.
All right, I'll come.
I'll see you to the door.
Try to get some sleep. Take a pill or something. Have you anything?
Some Nembutal.
You look exhausted.
I am.
Is that door kept locked?
Yes, and so is this one to the street. You can catch a Fifth Avenue bus. There's lots of cabs.
Oh, I'll manage. I'll try to get some sleep. I'll see you tomorrow night around 9.
Goodbye for night, and thanks. Thanks very much.
Good night.
No. No. Get away. Get away! No. No, no. Get away from me, you hear? Get away. Pitting! Pitting! No. Don't touch me. Get away from me. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. Pitting! Pitting!
Yes, sir. I'm coming.
Hurry, Pitting. Hurry.
What's the matter, sir? What is it?
You took long enough coming. You suddenly gone deaf. When I call you, I expect you to come. You hear?
I'm sorry, sir.
I'm getting sick of the way you act around here. Yes, sir. No, sir. Very good, sir. How are you, Pitting? A man or a machine? I'm sorry, Pitting. You won't understand this, but I felt something crush against me. I wish you'd sleep on the couch in my room.
Are you ill, Professor Gildea?
I don't know.
Is it the brandy, sir?
What? No, I'm not drunk, do you understand? You better keep a civil tongue in your head or you can go.
That might be the best arrangement.
No, look, Pitting, I'm sorry.
I don't care for your manners.
All right, get out of here then. Pack your clothes and get out right now.
I will leave in the morning, sir. It is not convenient for me to leave here at this hour of the night.
Murchison, thank heaven it's you come in.
Well, where's Pitting?
I fired him. He left this morning.
Fired?
After you left last night. I felt it.
Felt it?
Oh, sit down, sit down. Excuse me if I don't. I can't sit still. Last night, immediately after you left, I felt it brushed against me in the hall.
I felt it squeezing against me with loathsome, sickening tenderness. I called for Pitting. I forget what we said exactly, but we had a row. He left this morning. I sat up all night. It never left my side. It kissed me. It kissed me from inside my mouth.
Gilder!
Murchison, you've got to help me. I can't stand it any longer.
Oh, Gilder, get hold of yourself. You can't break up like this.
I was dead this morning, and Napoleon was making those same horrible lovesick sounds. I grabbed the cage and took him to a pet shop on 3rd Avenue and sold him. I'm at the end of my rope. I can't stay in this house alone any longer.
You said something about a lecture in Boston the other night. When is it?
Oh, the day after tomorrow.
Why don't you go up to Boston now?
Oh, what's the use? I'm in no condition to lecture.
This thing didn't go with you to Cuba, did it?
No.
Then perhaps you'll be free of it in Boston.
Could you possibly come with me? I know you're busy, but please come with me.
All right, I'll come.
Now, let's drive up. Can you leave now? My car's just around the corner in the garage.
All right, if you'll drive me home first so I can pack a bag.
Sum up my remarks tonight by reminding you that parasitism and consequent structural degeneration are not all confined to animals. Many plants show marked degenerative characteristics. You're all familiar with the corn and wheat infesting chinch bug of the Mississippi Valley. This is a parasitic fungus. No. Get away from me! Get away and leave me alone! Father Murchison, help me! It's here! It's on the stage!
In an instant, the lecture hall was in a turmoil. Somehow, I got him back to our hotel. The next day, we drove back to New York. It was now impossible to leave him. He was a shattered and broken man. I moved into the apartment with him. I was afraid to leave him alone. The night after we got home, he thought he had the solution. It was suggested by something I said. We were sitting in the drawing room with the curtains drawn and a fire going. Gilder, you've always had a strange, unhappy attitude to love. You told me once that friends, enemies, and women were the greatest time wasters in the world. You've always fought against intimacy, against affection. Why don't you give this thing what it asks?
What do you mean?
Give it love in return.
No! It's sickening. If it was an enemy, I could fight it. But it loves me with its idiot's brain and fawning, sickening affection, horribly physical.
Can you feel it now?
Yes, it's pressing against me. In this chair.
Oh, Gilder, please.
I'd better go to a hospital. I can't expect you to live here indefinitely. I can't stay in this house alone.
Would you like me to pray for you?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Now?
Yes, now, right now.
Will you try to stop resisting people? You've got to open your heart to people, to friendship, to love.
But not to this. Not to this. I hate it. I hate it.
Gilder, stop it.
I hate it.
You're killing yourself. You've got to stop this.
I hate it.
Oh, please, please, Gilder, control yourself. You've got to hang on to yourself. This is terribly hard on you. You've got to...
Wait, Murchison, wait. Wait.
What? What is it?
It's going. Go, yes. Yes, it's going. It's leaving me. Because I said I hated it. It's leaving me. I hate you!
Oh, Gilder, for the love of heaven,
quick,
stop!
Murchison, it's leaving. Quick, open the door. Quickly, please open the door.
Gilder,
don't
you've got to...
Don't stand there staring at me. Open the door.
Gilder,
can't
please.
You understand English? It's leaving me. Open the door.
All right.
And open the other one, the one out to the street. Open the one to the street. Open it wide.
I half thought I might feel something brush past me, but it didn't. I looked out through the light drizzling rain, and there on the park bench, I saw a figure.
I saw it.
I saw it sit down on the bench, huddled as though it was crying. I was frozen to the spot. It was real. I had seen it too. I started to rush after it when I heard Gildea scream. When I got back to the room, he was dead. The doctor said it was heart. I don't know. As I look back on it, I can't be sure whether I saw this figure on the bench or not. At the time, I was sure. Now I don't know. I know that Gildea was sane. He was a brilliant man. I liked him. His death was a great loss to the world. As for this strange thing that came to him, that is hard to understand. But I think that it is dangerous to resolutely shut out love and friendship from one's heart. It is dangerous, and it is abnormal to love no one. There is, of course, no explanation.
You have just heard How Love Came to Professor Gildea, Attraction 42 on Radio City Playhouse. Professor Gildea was Louis Van Ruten. Father Murchison was David Gothard. The parrot was Frank Milano. Pitting was Eugene Francis. The music was composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield. The story was written by Robert Hitchens and adapted for radio by Harry W. Junkin, who also directed the entire production.
This is Harry Junkin again. Next week, a tight, suspenseful story of an innocent woman convicted of murder, starring Bernard Grant and Mitzi Gould. Please join us next week at the same time to hear Motive for Murder, Attraction 43, next week on Radio City Playhouse. Good night, everybody.
Fred Collins speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, a strange story, I think, by any way of looking at it, how love came to Professor Gilderley. Radio City Playhouse from June 13th, 1949. We have another strange story, but at least it promises to be strange in the first place. Strange Wills, right after this. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lorene Tuttle puts in her second appearance for this Sunday night. We heard her earlier in The Great Gildersleeve as Marjorie. Well, here she's in a piece that's a little more intense. A story about one Harry McNeil, an actor's agent, who unveils a hot new singer, but said singer's teacher from Oshkosh, Wisconsin, makes trouble about the contract obligations, and the Royal Air Force gets involved too before it's all over in a story called The Prince of Broadway from Strange Wills.
Strange Wills. Stories of strange wills made by strange people, starring the distinguished Hollywood actor Warren William, and featuring Perry Ward, Lorene Tuttle, and an all-star Hollywood cast, and the original music of Del Castillo. I devise and bequeath to my heirs the 7 deadly sins: anger, jealousy, revenge, lust, envy, hate, and despair. And here is our distinguished star of radio, screen, and stage, Warren William.
Of all the sins that live in the human heart, none is so deadly as despair. It has been truly spoken that when a man loses faith in his friends, his neighbors, and himself, he is truly in a sorry plight. Harry McNeil, the Prince of Broadway, on a certain night not long ago, learned the full bitter meaning of the sin of black despair. I'll tell you the story in just a moment, after we hear a word from your announcer.
And now back to Warren William as John Francis O'Connell in The Prince of Broadway.
These are stories of strange wills made by strange people. Strange people whose last written chapter in the book of life is dominated by good or evil. The Prince of Broadway is the story of my friend Harry McNeil, actor's agent. But Harry was more than just an actor's agent. He had that uncanny genius of seeing talent where others couldn't. And once he took some talented youngster under his wing, he never stopped until his goal was reached. For 10 years, he discovered and promoted new talent for his company, Artists Incorporated, and sent a steady stream of actors, singers, and dancers to successful careers and fame. And then, one day, he grew tired and quit his job. After an extended vacation in Bermuda, he came back to New York and opened a very small office in the heart of Tin Pan Alley. The very first chance I had, I dropped in at his new address to wish him success in his new venture.
Well, this is my friend, the old mouthpiece in person. And do me a favor and park the tombstones outside, will you?
No tombstones with me, Harry. Just a social call and an invitation to lunch thrown in for good measure.
Well, we'll skip the lunch today, John, if we may, but come on in, let's chew the fat. And forget the dignity of the law, if that's possible.
No, that's not only possible, Harry, but a pleasure. I'll bring you up to date on Broadway gossip, but tell me, Harry, how did Artists Incorporated take your leaving?
Not very graciously, I can assure you. They even offered me a vice presidency and a trunk full of shekels to stay on, but no soap. I'm a free soul from now on. I'm going to be choosy. No more discovering budding genius. They got to have it when they come in or else.
Or else what, Harry?
Or else I don't want them, that's all. I handle only names now, Mr. Mouthpiece. Look, see these gray hairs on my temple? That's what I got trying to put potential geniuses in marquee lights. Gray hair and ulcers at 29. If I keep it up, where do you think I'll be at 39? Well, I'll tell you. You'll be filing my will in probate court, and for all I know, adding my will to your collection of strange wills made by strange people. Oh, no, not for me.
You still give me a laugh in spite of your new resolutions, but I know you better than you think I do.
Yeah?
There's someone to see you, Harry.
Tell him to come back tomorrow. I'm busy.
I didn't say it was a him. It's a her. Get what I mean?
Well, maybe
it's Alice Faye or Sonia Heaney.
Honey, what's her name?
Just a minute. She says her name is Pulaski, Gertrude Pulaski. She has a letter for you from her singing teacher in Oshkosh. Gosh. I'm sending her in.
Hey, wait, honey, wait.
When Gertrude Pulaski stood in the doorway, neither Harry or I could take our eyes away from her. She must have been the inspiration of Did You Ever See a Dream Walking? Luxurious ash blonde hair fell in soft ringlets around her shoulders. Her eyes were the color of a deep purple violet. Her figure would have made even the great Ziegfeld take a second look. And her provocative smile, well...
Hello.
Oh, come in, Miss Gertrude.
Thank you.
Well, Harry, if you'll excuse me, I'll be running.
Oh, no, don't go, John. This will only take a minute or two. Gertrude, I'm Harry McNeil. This is my good friend and attorney, John Francis O'Connell.
Oh, it is a pleasure.
How do you do?
I know why you're here, Gertrude. You don't have to tell me. You want a career.
Oh, yes.
You want your name on Broadway.
Yes.
You want fame and fortune. But it's no use. I don't develop talent anymore. I only take names, people who have reputations.
Oh.
I'm sorry, but...
But what, Mr. McNeil?
But what... But what will you sing, of course? You hear? Let me sit down at the piano. Now then, let's find a good number. You know this one?
Yes, of course, and I'll play it, too.
Good enough. Here, I'll move over. Room enough?
More than enough. Now you can turn the pages for me.
That'd be a pleasure. Hold it, just a minute. That's enough. Sugar, let's relax and sing it a little bit lower, will you? Now, this isn't an audition for the Met. These words were written right from some guy's heart, and I want you to sing them from your heart. Here, move over and let me play it for you. Now, let's try it again,
Yes, Mr. McNeil.
Okay.
We've heard of racehorses, kept under wraps until the day of the big race. Well, Harry McNeil went one better with the beautiful Gertrude Pulaski. 6 months went by, 6 long months that had my imagination on edge, because I couldn't wait to learn what had happened to his newest discovery. He only gave me hints. But one morning, I received an invitation in the mail to attend the debut of Judy Morrison, in a song recital at Harry McNeil's penthouse apartment the following Saturday night. Oh, exit Gertrude Pulaski. Enter Judy Morrison. The debut of a McNeil discovery was always one of the highlights for blasé columnists and important bigwigs. They were seldom, if ever, disappointed. Always the showman, Harry kept Gertrude, I mean Judy Morrison, out of sight until our natural excitement and curiosity reached a crescendo. And then, at exactly 11 o'clock, she made her triumphal entry. The girl was breathtaking. She wore a long, flowing, green evening gown that accentuated the ash blondness of her hair. Her charm and smile were devastating. Her poise was perfect. In appearance and demeanor, Judy Morrison was sensational.
Well, now that you've all had a good look at Judy, she'll show you that beauty and appearance and voice are not incompatible. Judy, will you take over the keyboard, please?
I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why I just do. I don't know why you thrill me like you do. I don't know why you just do. You never seem to want my romancing. The only time you hold me is when we're dancing. I don't know why I love you like I do.
Well, Judy, you've seen how your friends and mine like you. Supposing you thank them in your own way.
Of course I do thank you so very much. But you and I, all of us, have this night been privileged to worship at the altar of a genius. The genius of Harry McNeil. Everything that I am, that I may one day be, I owe to him. His unselfish love, his patience, his wisdom, his... I only wish that he loved me half as much as I love him.
From that night on, the ultimate success of Judy Morrison was an accepted fact. Harry arranged for her triumphal appearance at the world-famous Rococo Room. The papers were filled with stories about her. But the day before she was to open, a storm broke. Harry called me.
It's serious, John. I don't want to tell you about it over the phone, but I need a good lawyer, and quick.
I'll come over right away, Harry.
When Judy came to my office that day, she had a letter for me. I forgot to ask her for it, and she forgot to give it to me. It was a letter from her singing teacher up in Aishgeish, addressed to Artists Incorporated, to my attention. You see, John, everything was wonderful until her teacher came into town to attend her opening. He went over to Artists Incorporated to thank them for what they had done, and then bluey, they found out that Judy was their property. I'm accused of piracy. But much worse, John. They've succeeded in blackballing Judy from every top spot in the country. As long as I have her under my wing, Judy will never get a job.
I'm really sorry to hear this, Harry. Can't we make a deal with...
No, it's out of the question. They hate me for pulling out and they're after my scalp. But, John, nothing must stand in the way of Judy's career. I've never told a living soul, much less Judy, but I'm in love with her. From the first day she stood in that doorway, I fell head over heels in love.
Well, why don't you tell her? After all, marriage still comes before a career in my book. How do you know that Judy...
No, John. You see, we belong in different schools. To us, the theater is theater. It transcends everything. The show's got to go on. Judy will be everything I plan for her to be. I'll tell you how I want it worked. Draw up my will.
What are you going to do? A Brody from Brooklyn Bridge?
No, not that. I want you to will Judy Morrison, body and soul, to Artists Incorporated.
Harry, you're talking like a fool.
Well, if they own her, she'll go to town. She'll be where she belongs, on the top of the heap.
And you, Harry?
You know, John, I've held a pilot's license for 5 years. We're not in the war yet, but England is, and they need flyers. One more thing. I want your word that you'll never tell Judy what really happened. Tell her... Yes, just say that I got tired of going on. That I did everything I could for her, and from now on, she's on her own.
I never thought that I'd live to see the day that you'd run out on Judy.
You'll never know, John, how black, how bitter despair can be. If I have my way, you'll never see me alive again.
Part two of Strange Wills will follow in just a moment. And now back to the Prince of Broadway and Warren William.
My friend Harry McNeil disappeared from the world of men. Meanwhile, under the banner of Artists Incorporated, Judy Morrison became an overnight sensation. One night, Judy called me and asked me to meet her at the Swank Ziegbrew Room, where she was currently appearing. I noticed a tenseness in her voice.
John, I can't hold out any longer. I've got to know why Harry threw me over. It wasn't like him.
Why is that important, Judy? Haven't you got what you wanted from life? Beauty, charm, talent, fame? You're the toast of Broadway.
Values in life change, John, believe me. 9 months ago, I thought that was what I wanted. I thought that success was all that mattered. But I've changed. John, you never know what is in your heart until someone you once loved is gone. Now I know how deeply, how very deeply I loved Harry. It was because of him that I was able to reach this thing we call success. I know now that he was my inspiration. I want him, John. I want him with all my heart.
But he's gone, Judy. He joined the RAF. That's all any of us know. He's never written a line to a single one of his friends.
John, tell me honestly. Did he love me?
Well, really...
You've got to tell me. You see, if Harry loved me, I'll search the world to find him just to sit at his feet. If he didn't, if he really tired of me, if I must abandon hope, then I'm going to marry Felix George, the vice president of Artists Incorporated. He proposed to me last night. I said I'd give him my answer tonight.
If ever a man was saved with a bell, it was I. Judy was called to go on with her act, and I was left alone to ponder the question of legal ethics and love. I was sworn to silence by my client, and yet I wanted to tell Judy the truth.
I want to dedicate my next number to a very great and gallant man. His name is Harry McNeil. And I know no matter where he may be, he'd like to hear the song I'm going to sing. You see, he taught me how to sing it.
When my dream boat comes home, then my dreams no
See, Mr. Counselor, I put my cards on the table. I've got a little boat of dreams that I won't let go of.
Listen, Judy. I'm going to do something I shouldn't. But I'm willing to live with my conscience in spite of my action. You're right. Harry loved you as no other human being ever will.
Oh.
He turned you over to Artists Incorporated because your singing teacher gave you a letter addressed to them. And by that letter, you belonged to them.
What?
They had you blackballed in every spot in town. And Harry did the greatest thing a real man ever did. He willingly and knowingly sacrificed his deep love for you in order that your ambitions would be realized.
I knew it. I felt it all the time. Oh, John, why didn't you tell me?
I thought you wanted a career, Judy. I honestly did.
Oh, John, men are such fools. Such fools.
Judy's offer to entertain British troops was quickly and eagerly accepted. Within 2 months, she had arrived in London, and then she began her long search for Harry McNeil. Meanwhile, at home, events moved with startling rapidity. Then there came that day of infamy, December 7th, 1941. I received my commission as Captain U.S. Infantry and was assigned to legal duties in the Provost Marshal's office in London. 3 days after my arrival, I had lunch with Judy at the Savoy.
I think he's dead, John. And yet I won't be satisfied until I'm positive. He's listed as missing in action, and his squadron commander told me that he was shot down in flames over Berlin.
Oh, don't give up, Judy. I've always believed in a sort of special providence that watches over people in love.
No, I won't give up. I'll keep right on searching if it takes me the rest of my life.
Then came D-Day. France was liberated. World-stirring events followed in rapid succession. Germany was invaded. The Battle of the Bulge, and the end was nearing. And then the news we had all been waiting for, Germany surrendered. But as the war came to its inevitable end, Judy became more disconsolate. Though she searched every hospital in Europe, no trace was ever found of a Major McNeil. He had disappeared. Judy and I met once more in Munich. I hardly recognized her when I called for her at her billet. Her eyes were sunken, she was pale and wan, and the emotional strain she'd been under these past years was indelibly etched on her face.
It's all over, John. My hopes are run out. There's nothing left for me now but to go home.
Judy, you've done everything a human being could possibly do under these conditions. You're tired, young lady. You must go back immediately.
Yes, I know. I've made arrangements to fly to London tomorrow. And then it's back to New York.
It's too bad, Judy.
Yes, John, I guess my little boat of dreams is finally foundered. What time is it, please?
Why, it's 3:30.
Would you be a kind man and take a ride with me?
Where to?
On my last appearance. I'm scheduled to sing at a little hospital just outside of Oberammergau. I understand that most of the patients are blind.
I'm at your service, Judy, and if you will permit me to say so, I consider it an honor and a privilege.
We have only about 60 patients. They are nationals of every country in the war.
Are they all blind, Doctor?
Most of them, but we have about 20 who are psychopathic cases. We are especially happy that you have come, Miss Morrison. You see, we have learned that musical therapy is very beneficial as a means of recovery. Mm. In many instances, our medical knowledge is of little value. Well, if you are ready...
You come too, John, won't you?
Of course, if I can be of help.
Come this way, please. Our piano survived the war, but I'm afraid it's badly out of tune. Here we are. Many of them are seriously wounded as well as blind.
Oh, John, how horrible.
Frau Zimmermann will accompany you. You have your music?
Oh, yes, Doctor, here it is. I'll walk around the room as I sing. You see, Doctor, I'm looking for a certain soldier. In fact, I've been looking now for almost 4 years. He's listed as missing in action.
What is his name?
McNeil. Major Harry McNeil of the Royal Air Force.
I am sorry, Miss Morrison, but our records do not show...
Yes, I know. I've heard that from London to Berlin. But I'm still looking.
When my dream boat comes home, then my dreams no more will roam. I will meet
Judy sang her heart out to those boys, just as she'd done month after month, year after year. She visited every bed, looking, hoping, praying. Many of the patients were swathed in bandages from head to foot. How she ever hoped to identify Harry was beyond understanding. But as she stood there, literally singing with eyes full of tears, she was a picture I'll never forget. the late afternoon sun came streaming into the room and formed an aura of light over her head. She looked like and was an angel of mercy.
Oh, John, my last hope is gone. Take me home, please.
We walked slowly to the door. Her head was bowed. Judy was crying softly. Just as we reached the door, she stopped. She turned and took a last lingering look round the room. The sun had dipped even lower and shone across the beds of the wounded, making long, grotesque shadows on the wall. And then we walked out through the door. Suddenly, Judy raised her head. Her eyes had a wild, startled look. She grabbed my arm and looked up into my eyes.
John! John, the ring! I saw it! The ring! His ring! Oh, what a fool!
She turned and ran back into the room. Ran to the bed of a man swathed in bandages from head to foot. Only his hands were showing. And on his finger, I saw the ring. A black onyx stone that caught the last faint shimmer of sunshine. Judy was kneeling at the bed, sobbing as only a desperate love can sob.
I found you, Harry. I found you.
She stood silently by, watched through tear-filled eyes. We saw the hand of our brave and blind Major Harry McNeil close tenderly over hers.
Warren William will be back in just a moment to tell you the rest of the story of The Prince of Broadway. But first, here is a word from your announcer. And here again is Warren William.
Judy and Harry were married the next day, and I had the honor of being present at the bedside ceremony. Harry was invalided back to the States and is now living with Judy on a little farm in Connecticut. Judy, of course, after her long and meritorious service record, is again the toast of Broadway. And Artists Incorporated, in spite of Harry's protests, have elected him a vice president and have his office ready for him as soon as he is able to return. And so, two wonderful young people found out that the theater and love are not only compatible, but necessary for a complete happiness. And Harry's famous will... well, I just added it to my collection of strange wills. Next week, I'm going to tell you a story about a last will that started a treasure hunt on the floor of the ocean for a king's ransom in rubies, diamonds, and pagan gold. The log of the Spanish three-master, Toledo, was washed ashore on a desolate West Indies island through modern science and the skill of a beautiful young forensic chemist. The last position of the ship was discovered. Discovered not only by Captain Paul George, courageous young American, but, unfortunately, by the desperate crew of an ex-German U-boat who had fled Germany at the end of the war. What took place at the bottom of the ocean is a thriller that I promise you won't forget for a long time to come. We call this strange story Treasure to Starboard. This is Warren William inviting you to listen again next week.
Strange Wills is written by Ken Crepin and directed by Albert Ulrich. This is a Teleways feature produced in Hollywood.
Another story about a strange will made by a strange person. That was The Prince of Broadway, with Lorene Tuttle in particular. Spotlight there, and well deserving of it too. So talented a radio actor she was. We'll have a little bit of levity in just a moment, some political humor, as old-time radio drama continues this Sunday night here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.